Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The sky is falling. The sky is falling. Or is it? A reality check on those automatic federal budget cuts. The latest healthcare company, it's called Weight Watchers, and giving up religion for the sake of a tax cut. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is the Marketplace Podcast for Monday, April 1st. I'm Sarah Gardner in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us. We've got ourselves an anniversary today, the one-month anniversary of the CEQA. Oops, Kai would not want me to use that word. The one-month anniversary of those automatic across-the-board federal budget cuts that Congress and the president let kick in. There had been dire warnings of uninspected meat, unsafe airline flights, and worker furloughs. But here's the thing. It hasn't happened. Okay, Washington, what's going on? Marketplace's Scott Tong checks it out for us.
On the eve of sequestration, Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood warned of air travel calamity, that we would have fewer air traffic controllers watching the skies. We have a 30-day window, he said. That window closes today. Reality?
I think the control tower at JFK in New York is quite safe.
Aviation analyst Richard Abulafia says the sequester has sliced just a few regional air markets.
I don't think you're going to see any kind of meaningful cutback that really affects the entire system. What you will see is a bit of pain here and there.
The Agriculture Secretary, Tom Vilsack, warned pre-sequestration there will be disruption in food inspection due to furloughed inspectors. Then Congress came up with the cash to undisrupt things. Jack Pitney is a political scientist at Claremont McKenna College.
It's about as surprising as the fact that Monday follows Sunday. Whenever there are cuts looming, the bureaucracy will trot out a parade of horribles.
Now, he says, the Obama administration has lost budget credibility. There's now a crying wolf perception. The thing is, defense analyst Byron Callen at Capital Alpha Partners says many cuts do hurt. They just take time to bite. Already, two defense contractors have downgraded their sales projections due to Pentagon cuts.
And we continue to see these consolidation efforts, layoff announcements come out of defense contractors as they kind of reposition and resize as well.
The point is not that the sky didn't fall. It's that the clouds arrived and the rain comes later. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Congress may be stalled on a budget compromise, but immigration reform may be a different story. There's a pending deal now between labor and business, and Congress may start debating this as early as next week. Under the deal between the AFL-CIO and business leaders, there'd be a new guest worker program, and employers would have to pay those workers prevailing wages. So what exactly is a prevailing wage? Marketplace's David Weinberg sorts it out.
In 1927, a contractor from Alabama was hired by the federal government to build a veterans hospital in New York. So the contractor hired a crew of black construction workers from the South.
And those workers were paid substantially less than the local workers in the area.
Peter Phillips is a labor economist at the University of Utah. He says Long Island representative at that time, Robert Bacon, objected to the presence of black workers in his district. So he and Senator James Davis wrote the Davis-Bacon Act, which was signed into law in 1931. It states that contractors must pay local wages, also known as prevailing wages.
And so prevailing wages are an effort to create a compromise where outside workers can come in, but when they come in, they have to be paid based on local labor standards.
But Davis-Bacon applies only to federal public works contracts. Under the proposed guest worker program, all workers who come to America under guest visas will have to be paid the prevailing wage, or the employer wage, whichever is higher. So how does that prevailing wage get set? James Parrott at the Fiscal Policy Institute says it's done at the local level.
So state governments have developed extensive wage payment data, so they use those surveys to determine what the prevailing wages should be.
The guest workers will be low-skilled workers who come to work in agriculture, the service industry, and construction. High-skilled construction workers will be excluded from the program at the request of construction unions. The details of the guest worker program are expected to be unveiled later this month when Congress returns to work. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
As we told you at the top of the show, today marks the first month anniversary of those automatic federal budget cuts. The National Park Service, for one, is using free enterprise to offset the 5% across-the-board cuts. For years, the Park Service has awarded concessions for companies to operate inside national parks. Now it's taking that a step further by selling naming rights for historic sites and landmarks. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has the scoop.
At her dusty Kentucky Ford dealership, Pauline Wilkes is making a sale over coffee.
Yeah, it's a good deal. She only has about 100,000 miles on it.
What really gets her engine running is a big change just down the road. Wilkes is a two-minute drive from Abraham Lincoln's birthplace. In a few weeks, the sign marking that site will read Ford Lincoln National Park.
It's a way for us to support the national parks, and it's good for business. People see that sign, and they know that Ford supports our presidents, even if they're dead.
Commercial sponsorships are likely to become more common at national landmarks as the cash-strapped federal government attempts to squeeze revenue from wherever it can. Kevin Hassett is director of economic policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute. He says this idea appeals to both sides of the aisle.
I think that conservatives support this 100% because they think that to the extent that you allow the private sector into the government sector, you'll improve its efficiency.
And, Hassett says, it'll help buffer some of the sequester cuts.
People are looking at really billions of dollars of potential here. I think that pretty much every corner of government is going to have a name on it sometime soon.
The government won't simply sell to the highest bidder. It wants to match monuments with sponsors whose names or logos are appropriate.
The Statue of Liberty is going to become the Statue of Liberty Mutual. We also understand that McDonald's is trying to sponsor the Gateway Arch in St. Louis.
Another deal in the works is Johnson & Johnson's $200 million bid to have Band-Aid sponsor the Wounded Knee Memorial. The Park Service will announce the program formally later today, April 1st. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
You know, he had me up until Band-Aids and Wounded Knee. April fools everybody. But here's something we are not fooling around about today. The stock market fell. Details when we do the numbers. Stockton, California today became the biggest U.S. city ever to enter bankruptcy. A judge here in California said it was necessary so that the city could continue delivering basic services. Stockton's problems started during the financial crisis. Creditors, needless to say, are not happy about today's decision. Joining us now is Michael Sweet, a bankruptcy attorney in California who's been watching the Stockton case closely. Mr. Sweet, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sarah.
What does this mean, this bankruptcy filing acceptance? What does this mean for the city of Stockton?
This means that the city of Stockton now they got their ticket punched. They now are going to go through the process of seeing if they can get a bankruptcy plan approved by the judge. And under that plan, they will be proposing to make reduced payments to their creditors and explain how they're going to be able to get out of bankruptcy.
Who's got the most to lose of those creditors?
Obviously, the folks who have a lot, the most at stake, are the bondholders. They're the ones who have been fighting so hard with the city about whether or not the city would even be eligible to file bankruptcy. The other folks who are the 800-pound gorilla in the room are those who represent CalPERS, the state pension fund. Because the city has so much money owed to CalPERS, even though the city has said at this point that they intend to pay CalPERS everything it's owed, the judge said he isn't sure that the city could do that and still meet its requirements under the bankruptcy law to get a plan confirmed.
Wow.
That has reverberations not just statewide, but across the country. They're watching this in San Bernardino in Southern California, where they filed bankruptcy and actually were talking about impairing CalPERS. And it also, people are watching this in places like Detroit, which are having the same kinds of problems that Stockton was having. They made promises to their employees for extraordinary pensions in defined benefit programs, and now they're having trouble meeting the cost of those promises.
So this goes way beyond the city of Stockton, California.
Absolutely. There are cities across the country that are suffering what Stockton suffered with revenues going down or at least remaining stagnant at a time when costs are going up for both the pension plans and for health care, both for employees and retirees.
Michael, how long do you think this will take, this whole bankruptcy proceeding, before Stockton can set itself right again?
If there isn't an appeal, and this is the kind of a case where the possibility of appeal is real, and it's the kind of thing that may go to the highest levels. But if the appeal doesn't happen, I think the plan confirmation process will probably take between 6 months and a year. If there are appeals, I'd say all bets are off. It could go a long time.
Michael Sweet is a bankruptcy attorney at Fox Rothschild in San Francisco. Mr. Sweet, thanks a lot.
It's been my pleasure, Sarah. Thanks very much.
It's that time of year when colleges finally put high school seniors and their anxious parents out of their collective misery. By today, almost all schools have sent out their acceptance and rejection letters. Many selective colleges report another record year for applications, which means they turned more students away, but not before collecting their application fees. From the education desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Marketplace's Amy Scott does the numbers.
Niall Murphy, a high school senior from Los Angeles, spent $700 on college application fees this year. Or should I say his parents did?
I applied to Bard, Carleton, Rhodes, UC Merced, UC Davis.
This goes on for a while. 16 colleges in all. The web and the common application have made it easy to apply to a bunch of schools at once.
Because why not? That was the mentality that my parents had going in, was wherever you get money from, we'll consider.
Why not is one reason applications keep pouring in to elite colleges at record rates, and so does money. Take Harvard. It got 35,000 applications this year. Harvard says it waives the fee for more than 10% of its applicants. Even so, at $75 a pop, that's more than $2 million. But that's Harvard. A smaller school like Vassar College brought in a smaller windfall, about $380,000 in fees.
No, it's really such a small item in our budget that it doesn't make much difference at all.
That's Vassar president Catherine Hill. Applications to Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota jumped 20% this year, but fees didn't. Paul Thibuteau is dean of admissions.
We, in fact, waive an application fee for anyone who submits their application online, and that's how all of our applications are coming in.
But the surge in applications is great for business in another way. Appearing more selective attracts more students that you can then turn down to appear more selective. Niall Murphy says one of the first things he looked at was a college's acceptance rate.
You want to apply to schools with lower acceptance rates and you want to get into those schools. It kind of just becomes about feeling good about yourself.
He got into Bard College in New York and five other schools. He's waiting to hear about financial aid. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The British government was accused today of murder. Rather, a left-wing commentator said it was murdering the welfare state. The charge came as the most radical reform yet of Britain's post-war benefits system kicked in. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Linda Edwards lives on welfare with her disabled son on a housing project in South London. She has one more room than she needs, so from today she has a stark choice: lose $1,000 worth of benefits a year or move to a smaller property.
I mean, I'm 54. Why should I have to do that? Why should I have to, move out? You know, I mean, I'm actually caring for my son. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm doing a job.
Hundreds of thousands of Brits like her face losing handouts. Prime Minister David Cameron says he must save public money and give people more incentive to work. But Liam Byrne of the opposition Labour Party says he's penalising the most vulnerable.
The system that supports those of our neighbours who are in need is being taken apart. What he's now implementing is a brutal society where those who are poorest have the most taken from them.
The government says there's widespread abuse of welfare. When it introduced a tough new test for disability benefit, almost a million people dropped their claim rather than submit to it. Some had been citing blisters and acne as reasons for their inability to work. The minister behind the reforms is Ian Duncan Smith.
What we're doing is getting some fairness in the system, getting the bills under control, and reforming a system that lets people trapped on benefit out of work. That has to change. We're changing it now.
Welfare and state pensions will soon account for $320 billion a year in Britain, a third of all public spending. The government claims that even with the reforms, it won't reduce that overall bill, just stop it spiralling out of control. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up, SlimFast unveils a new ad campaign focusing on reasons to lose weight.
Think Clouds, or one actual speaking cloud that comes out as she's saying, I want to get into my new pants, and then there's a sort of a thought bubble above her head that says, I want to get into someone else's pants.
But first, let's do the numbers. We won't bore you with any record-setting numbers today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dipped less than 0.1% or 5 points to close at 14,572. The NASDAQ dropped 0.8%, that's 28 points, to finish at 3239. And the S&P 500 gave back 0.4%, 7 points, to finish at 1562. Now, the tech industry loves April Fool's pranks, but Apple's performance was no joke. Its shares sliced off 3% after a big mutual fund said it had cut its stake in the company. Google's stock was up 0.8% on news it would shut down YouTube and introduce new scented search results. Just kidding. And Tesla Motors, maker of those expensive electric cars, was up 16% after saying it would report its first quarterly profit. Now, that is actually true. Bond prices rose. The yield on a 10-year T-note fell to 1.83%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. We'll get an idea of how the economy is ticking along when the Commerce Department releases factory orders for the month of February. We'll see if Pep Boys, Manny Moe, and Jack were able to reverse slowing sales when they release earnings from the last quarter. And it's the 45th anniversary of Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. The film has since earned over $190 million worldwide. I'm Bridget Bodner.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Sarah Gardner. With 2 weeks to the tax deadline, a lot of us are trying to figure out how to cut our tax bills. Now, if we lived in Germany, we could do this quite easily by giving up religion. That's right. Any German who belongs to a Catholic or Protestant church has to pay a special tax that pays for church operations. As John Lorenzen reports from Berlin, hundreds of thousands of German Christians have done the math and decided to have a little less faith.
So there's some black tea or green tea.
I'm having tea with engineer Stefan Vollstroh in his chic modern apartment in Berlin. He's a classy kind of guy, and I wouldn't be so crass as to ask what he earns, but from the look of this place, it's quite a lot. Stefan, though, no longer pays the church tax that used to gobble up 4% of his salary. Is it, I ask, that he's lost his faith?
No, actually, it was more about the money. I think my mother, she was a bit, how can you leave church? But for me, it was more the fact that I will no longer pay church tax.
And so now? Do you sometimes sneak into church nevertheless, I don't know, Christmas or Easter? Or?
Yes, of course, I do actually, yes. In church. Do I feel guilty? No, not really. But sometimes I wonder if I should go back or become a member of church. I mean, obviously, when you have your funeral, no priest will come to your funeral, so that's a downside maybe, but that's a few years from now.
Surveying the church pews every Sunday, Pastor Johann Hinrich Clausen, Dean of the Hamburg region, has an eye out for tax dodgers, especially wealthy ones. The figures, he agrees, are worrying. Christians, Protestants and Catholics combined are leaving their churches at a rate of about 300,000 people a year. His church is trying to diversify its revenues so it can maintain church buildings, pay the pastors and so on. But he says Germany should keep its church taxes.
They have been invented 100 years ago in order to make the people of the church pay for the work of the church, and not only the patrons or the king or the Kaiser. So church tax was invented to democratize the church. That's still an old and, I think, very good idea. And it takes more from people who earn more and less from people who earn less and nothing from people who earn nothing.
But what to do when those who can pay don't? Last year, Germany's Catholic bishops took a tough line. A member who refuses to pay taxes will no longer be allowed to receive communion or make confession, to serve as godparents or to hold any office in the church. Those who leave can also be refused a Christian burial unless they give some sign of repentance. The Protestants are more accommodating. Wolfgang Georgsdorf is a lapsed Protestant who doesn't pay the church tax.
When my mother died at the age of 67, we wanted the pastor, who was my religious teacher and my brother's too, to come and hold a service. And we admitted that our mother was not in the Protestant church for years before she died anymore. And he said, well, I think she quit because of the money, because she couldn't afford it. She had to save money for her life. And I have understanding for that. And that should not stand in the way that I am holding the service. And he did.
Other believers, though, when it's time to meet their maker, will be able to stretch out in their coffins with great moral ease. Sebastian Wendland, for example, who says he's happy to pay the tax, even though he's not much of a churchgoer. He thinks church schools and kindergartens and hospitals and so on provide a healthy alternative to the state sector. And as a marketing director for a beer company, he's travelled quite a bit in the US and doesn't much like what he's seen of the American model of church funding.
I had often seen their churches that look a little bit like they have too much of a consumer orientation in a way, yeah? Where they're playing rock music and, you know, they're doing all sorts of crazy stuff and so on. And I have nothing against rock music, but I would want to have a church that is doing the right thing for the community and for God, but not do stuff to attract a sort of clientele.
In Berlin, I'm John Lawrenson for Marketplace.
Okay, no April Fool's joke here, guys, but Weight Watchers is no longer a diet company. Nope, the CEO says Weight Watchers is more of a healthcare company. That's just one of the branding changes going on in the multi-billion dollar diet industry in America, an industry that's being forced to rethink how it sells itself as it competes against newbies to the industry like free diet apps on smartphones. E.J. Schultz writes all about it in a new article in Ad Age. E.J., it's good to have you on the program.
Hi, nice to be here.
Let's start with Weight Watchers. They are changing their strategy. They're focusing more on healthy lifestyles than just weight loss. What's driving this?
I think it's the fact that, for one thing, the market size for weight management is just absolutely enormous. There's something like 40% of the people in the U.S. that are known to be, quote unquote, watching their diet. And if you add up all the companies involved in weight management, it adds up to something like $41 billion, according to a market researcher called Package Facts.
Wow.
So I believe it's just Weight Watchers trying to continue to grow their business in this ever-expanding market.
What about SlimFast? Evidently, they've got a new ad campaign coming out soon that focuses on sex. Really?
Right. They sort of get right to the point in what they believe the reason is people are watching their weight. They really sort of play up the so-called bedroom benefits of losing weight in a pretty provocative ad campaign.
You've seen the ads. What are they saying exactly?
Well, there's one ad that we've seen that shows sort of a silhouette of a woman. And then there's two sort of think clouds, or one actual speaking cloud that it comes out as she's saying, I want to get into my new pants. And then there's a sort of a thought bubble above her head that says, I want to get into someone else's pants.
And the tagline is, get what you really want, Slim Fast.
So this new focus that Weight Watchers has, that Slim Fast has, do you think it's going to be enough to draw in people who are attracted to these sort of do-it-yourself programs that they're using on their mobile phones?
I think Weight Watchers is trying to position their company as something that if you join us, we will not only help you lose weight, we'll help you keep it off. They're probably hoping that people with the free apps maybe join for a day or two or a week or month and then just slowly forget about it. I think the fact is if you're paying for something, as in Weight Watchers, you're a little bit more invested and that you might be more likely to continue to stick with the program if you're seeing the steady results that they promise.
Do we know, EJ, whether these free apps are effective and whether they really are cutting substantially into the business of people like Weight Watchers?
We have actually heard Weight Watchers actually bring these apps up during earnings calls to describe sort of what was for them a slightly disappointing recent quarter. The first question, I guess it's not settled. I haven't seen any actual reports kind of looking at whether or not the do-it-yourself apps, you know, are actually working. However, I will say that Consumer Reports did a survey of its readers recently, and one of the apps called MyFitnessPal actually scored the best amongst readers. It scored an 83, and Weight Watchers scored something like a 74. But Weight Watchers did come out on top of the commercial plans.
EJ Schultz writes for Advertising Age. EJ, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And finally, if you work in retail sales in this country, you're not alone. Really not alone. Turns out retail salesperson is the most common job in America today. 4.3 million of us are selling stuff in malls, big box stores, boutiques, and the like. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which also calculated the least common job they could find. Now, that would be a prosthodontist. I hope I pronounced that right. They specialize in, among other things, false teeth. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow dipped less than 0.1%, or 5 points. The NASDAQ dropped 0.8%, 28 points. And the S&P 500 gave back 0.4%, 7 points. Our producers include Bridget Bodner, Gina Delvac, Mary Du, Nancy Fargali, Millie Jefferson, John Ketchum, Jolie Myers, and Chow Tu. I'm Sarah Gardner. Hope you can join us again tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.